Hey, Lifebook VIPs, this is Peter Scott with my best friend and also fellow Lifebook member, Dr. Sean Stevenson. Sean, how you doing, brother?
What's going on, man?
All right, thank you for coming to the call. This call is going to be all about Character Month for the Lifebook VIPs, an area of your life that I know is incredibly important as well as my own.
And well, we know you're lacking in that.
You know, I just try to copy you and follow your lead. Since I'm lacking in some areas, I just pick up where you
Peter, your nickname is Right Click.
Right Click. Thank you. Well, most of the time I give credit to what I learn. Other times I kind of let things fall through the cracks. So
yeah, it's okay. Learned.
All right, guys. Well, I want to dive right in, Sean. I know you are, you know what, before we jump in, why don't you just give a little bit of background on you in case for some odd reason a Lifebook VIP doesn't know who Sean Stevenson is. Could you just do a quick overview of your background and then I'll share mine?
Sure. Well, first of all, I don't claim to have everybody on this planet know me, so I'm happy to describe what I'm here to do and what I'm going to create on this program with you. So I was born with a rare disorder called osteogenesis imperfecta. Stunts the growth of my bones to about 3 feet in length. I use a wheelchair for physical mobility. And I always start with that because then that's all pretty much the last time I talk about that. Because it's definitely caused me to have a unique life. I've had over 200 bone fractures. Something as simple as sneezing would fracture a bone growing up. Multiple surgeries. And all kinds of interesting things happen when you're 3 feet tall and in a wheelchair in this lifetime. But that's only about 2% of who I am, maybe 3 on a bad day. I've gone on to really maximize my life by doing what you would call designing a fearless life. Mm-hmm. And that comes down to, what do I want to do on this planet, even if I'm scared to do it? And we're going to get into that, I'm sure, at some point in this interview. But I've been blessed to travel the world. I've spoken to hundreds of thousands of people in live audiences. I've reached nearly 30 million people on video. I've worked in the White House for a U.S. president, on Capitol Hill for a congressman. My book is in 12 different languages. I've had a TV show. I've appeared on almost majority of the major news networks. I mean, I've lived a very charmed life by design, and it's not been easy. I've had my heart broken. I've been cheated on. I've been, I've had people take money wrongfully from me because I wasn't listening to my gut early on. I've had a lot of bumps and bruises along the way. So it's been definitely balanced out. And it's been amazing having you in my life, Peter, because I've learned a lot from my younger self, if you will. Peter and I are 6 years apart, and I see the piss and vinegar in Peter that I once had. And it
Oh, you've still got it. You still have it.
Okay. All right. Well, it renews that when I'm around you. And hopefully I have some rounding of the rough edges for you as well, because I've been on this planet making 6 more years of experienced mistakes and 6 more years of miracles. So this is going to be fun. This is two buddies shooting the shit with you know, some eavesdroppers.
I love it, brother. Well, this interview for the listener is all about two things that we are incredibly passionate about. One is insecurity. Sean, I know your mission is to rid the world of insecurity.
I thought you were going to say, Sean, I know you're dramatically insecure.
You're dramatically insecure, so I figured why not interview you on this call?
Yeah. And you're the fear guy. You love talking about fear.
And I'm consumed by fear. Yeah, exactly. So my mission is to transform the way the world experiences fear, and the reason is because my entire life has been consumed by fear. So it's interesting how we often teach what we want most to learn, right? And so I'd love for you to share your experience with insecurity and fear. Those are the two topics of this call. I know they've been prevalent in your life, and you've done tremendous amounts of work to overcome them yourself, and then all obviously teach tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people how to do that themselves. So what has your experience, Sean, been with insecurity, with fear, and how has that brought you to where you are today?
Well, somebody can make the argument, and they may be right, that insecurity is a fear, and fear is an insecurity. I'll give you an example. I believe that insecurity is a fear of not being enough, that you're not enough. And fear is a doubt that you're not guided and safe, which is an insecurity that, you know, you're not safe. So the way I look at this is my interest is in insecurity because every human being, I've kind of been narrowing this down recently, every human being I feel like has sperm survival guilt, right? So there are 100 million ejaculated sperm from their father into their mother, as graphic as that might be, they won the race. Mm-hmm. 99 million other sperms didn't. And here they are, and they're wondering, like, why am I here, and am I really special? I mean, if I told you that you won a lottery where you were one out of 100 million, I think you'd feel pretty special. But for some reason, we delete that when we get into this lifetime. So all human beings are faced with this issue of, you know, why am I here, and why do I not feel like enough? And we get into some bad habits of trying to seek validation to feel like you're enough, trying to acquire success to prove that you're enough, try to see how many women or men you can be with to be enough, to see how much you can intimidate others, even down to violence is all an insecurity of feeling like you're not enough. You need to take and destroy externally or internally to get to that homeostasis. And I just find it doesn't have to be that way. And so I have dug deep into insecurity and I've looked at my own. You know, I believe that we are our own best lab rats. You know, if all of a sudden I see somebody do something, I close my eyes, I figure out, okay, if I were to do that, how would that probably make me feel? And that gives me a gauge of probably what's running through their body. Because all human beings, we have the same set of emotions. Happiness, sadness, anger, denial, laughter, joy, love, betrayal. All these different emotions that we can feel, they're universal. You don't need to speak English to know that somebody's having an emotion in another language. And, you know, if you can learn how to be in control of your emotions, you can learn how to be in control of your life. The problem is most people let their emotions control their life, and then that's why they get into addictions, downward spirals, failures, and complete and total final apathy.
So, you know, when I hear you say this, Sean, the thing that keeps coming through my mind is how have you, or how would you advise another to become, number one, more aware of the emotions that they're experiencing? Maybe, you know, what are the things that are causing those emotions? And then actually, how do you actually control your own emotions?
So, all right, emotions are like killer whales. They're really big. And how do you control a killer whale? You know that you're not in control. You have to create the illusion of control with a killer whale. Mm-hmm. Because if any moment the killer whale realizes that it's, you know, it's much bigger than you, it can swallow you whole. And the same thing with emotion is you have to handle it like a killer whale. And the way I look at it is you can't control your emotions. While I said that briefly earlier, I meant to say in more depth that you have to create environments where the emotions that you want to be summoned are summoned.
Mm,
and
yes.
That's the difference, is if you create an emotion, if you create an environment that summons the emotion of anger, and then you try to control the anger, that's you're now playing catch up. If you create an environment where you get peace, then the peace comes up and you don't have to control that. You can enjoy that. So it's about creating the right environments to summon the right experiences, to experience the right emotions that you're looking for. And I'm not saying that you should never feel anger or sadness or guilt or anything. I'm just saying that, you know, every emotion has a purpose. the question is the emotion that you're in serving the purpose that you want?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. So another way you can deal with it is your body tells you what's going on with your emotional structure. You know, you literally can change emotions by not having enough food, by not going to the bathroom, by not getting enough sleep, by being in a room too cold or too warm. I mean, the environment physically even impacts your emotional state. Mm-hmm. But you still ultimately have the choice. If you are inclined to want to lose your shit, that'll naturally happen. But if you instead interrupt it and go, how can I change this environment internally or externally or both so that I get a new emotion summoned to the surface, that's far more responsible. And I feel like it's going to get you a better outcome.
Absolutely. Well, you're talking about a topic that every LifeWook member is very aware of in terms of the interconnectedness of categories, right? We're talking about character category this month, but you're showing the connection between your emotional life and your character. And one of the greatest lessons I remember learning from LifeBook is, you know, getting clear on what are those emotions I want to experience most of the time, you know, excitement, passion, you know, focus, whatever those are, and literally list out what are the environments that I need to put myself in to feel those emotions, who are the people I want to spend time with, what are the things I need to be doing in order to do that. So instead of, you know, reversing or avoiding or controlling those emotions, you control the things that contribute to those emotions is what I'm hearing you say. So great, great, great advice. One thing that I'd love for you to talk about, Sean, and this is one big aspect of your growth, I know, has been confidence and has been courage. And it's something that I talk a lot about in terms of overcoming fear. Now, I believe that courage and confidence is more of a result by doing the thing that scares you instead of a requirement to go do that thing, right? So it's something that is an effect to actually just doing the thing that terrifies you. But you have an incredible thing, a system that you use called the When Life Works List. And I'd love for you to share that with the LifeBook VIP community here. Because
well,
I think
I actually would rather you share it because, you know, I want the listener to know how it's impacted somebody because it's my idea. And so Therefore I'm going to be biased. I'm going to be, you know, blown rainbows and sunshine up their ass on this one. I'd rather you explain it. And I think it'll be fun to also hear how somebody else receives that.
Absolutely. So I'll give you my perspective on it. So what a When Life Works List that Sean created.
Look at this, Peter, I'm asking you to steal my shit right now.
I know. I like it. Well, see, I think I'm clearly crediting you on this one. So, so this is basically a list of things that you do on a day-to-day basis that when you do them, your life just works. You know, you're in a place of happiness and joy and fulfillment. And one thing that I know that you've done is you've created a list of about 15 to 20 different things, and it doesn't mean that you
16 to be exact for me.
16, okay, good to know. So 16 things to do, and I don't believe you have to do all of those on a daily basis. You
a quarter of them.
A quarter of them. Okay, so four of them. I have a thing that I call the Fearless Four, very similar. It's things that I do to put myself into a peak state so that I can go handle anything life throws at me and just go through life with more appreciation and gratitude and fulfillment. Some of those things for me, and I'd love to hear some of yours, and I know a few of these overlap, Sean, but these are actionable takeaways for the listener. For me, the first bottom line foundation, and you know how passionate I am about this, is leveraging
donuts.
Our body. Donuts, yes. Eat as many donuts as possible. I don't think John would approve of this, actually. But it's moving my body every single day, like sweating every single day. When I start my day with a workout, it doesn't have to be an intense 2-hour CrossFit workout. It can, but it can be a brisk walk or a yoga class or something that just puts your body in motion. I think it was Tony Robbins who said motion creates emotion, right? And so that literally gets my body to start feeling in a more powerful, courageous, confident way. Another thing that I do on a daily basis is meditation. There are countless forms of meditation. I remember when I was actively involved in the LifeBook community, I first heard about the benefits of it and I struggled with it, to be very honest. I, you know, that down for a couple minutes and I had this attachment to, who knows, levitating or becoming enlightened or something, right? And then I would get frustrated because I didn't get that result. But I detached myself from the result and just focus on the experience of showing up consistently every day. And now I meditate 15 minutes every single day. So what are some things that you have on your list? I've got a lot more that I do, but a couple things that you could share with the listener.
Sex.
Yeah, that's on my list too. Okay.
Sex with my partner, not just like random strangers. Although if you were single, that's up to you. Spending time with my mentors. Spending time with my niece and nephew. Because when you're around kids, and this one, Peter, I don't think you probably get enough exposure to, because you're hanging out with entrepreneurs all the time, and you don't really have any nieces or nephews nearby, or cousins, or anything. But when you're around little kids, like Winston.
Yes.
Winston will say something or do something, and he's only 6 years old, that reminds you to not take life too seriously. That will remind you to play and use your imagination. I mean, he came over not too long ago and he was pretending like he was a football running back with a pillow running in place on the couch, and he'd get hit and he'd fall over and he was like, oh man, I'm down on the 5 yard line. And he'd like walk through this fictitious, and there was a close score. I was like, wow, okay. And that imagination keeps me wanting to create new things. So that's one of them.
I just want to stop you for a second, because some people may just be listening to this call and not seeing the video. And what I'm seeing you do, Sean, is you're actually looking just off a camera on a wall in your office at this actual list.
Yeah.
So this is something that you keep in front of you and you see every single day, whether it's on your phone or on your wall in your office. You constantly have this reminder of, do these things, do a few of these things every day, and you're gonna, and your life will work.
You're fine, and you're fine. Yeah. Because when we get down to it, the When Life Works list is the cure to insecurity. It's self care. Mm-hmm. When a person has great mind, body, spirit, self care, they can't be messed with. And when you are creating a reality that is beautiful and magical, it needs to be perpetuated. The path needs to be paved with action items. Happiness, I don't believe a lot of people say happiness is a state of mind. No, I think happiness is the result of an action. I think that when somebody tells a funny joke, then you laugh. Or when somebody says, hey, let's just laugh for no reason, that's another action. Like, actions lead us to states. And sure, you can sit on a bench and contemplate a flower like Eckhart Tolle, but I don't have the patience for that. Most of the planet doesn't have the patience for that. I'm somebody that's like, hey, I can go to the gym. I can hang out with kids. I can, you know, get restful sleep. I can meditate. I can journal. I can organize. I can read materials about marketing and money. I can follow up with my mentors and apprentices. I can have sex with my wife. I can review my goals in my life book. It's actually on my wall here. I can plan out my day on paper. I can create new content. I mean, these are all actions that when I take them, I feel better about my life. And so if you get four of them, then you feel unstoppable that day. And then the insecurities remain dormant. I find you really don't get rid of the insecurities. You either live a life that activates them or keeps them dormant.
Yeah, and I want to connect this, what you're talking about, Sean, to fear, because that's also another big experience in people's lives is how to handle fear. And you mentioned what I think every fear boils down to is the fear that you mentioned at the beginning of this call, which is the fear of not being enough, right? We can say we fear failure. We can say we feel rejection. But at the end of the day, it comes down to that fear of not being enough. And when faced with that fear, you have a choice to either do that thing that scares you or to let it control you and stop you. And I think by you sticking to your When Life Works list, you create that environment, you create that state, you create that happiness where the fear may still be there, but your commitment and your energy and your state and all these things are in a place where that fear is so much smaller than it was when you started your day. I always say, being fearless is not being without fear. It's having the courage to do the thing that scares you. Go ahead, Sean. You're about to say something.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, well, I don't even know if the fear has to stick around. I believe at some point you get conditioned and the fear realizes there's no point for it anymore. There are things that you used to be afraid to do, Peter, that you don't even blink an eye doing now. And it's because it's repetition, it's conditioning. At some point, the brain makes the neural pathway, and then the fear is rendered useless.
Absolutely. So what would you say to the person that is in this place where they get this intellectually, right? They understand how if they do these things, they're going to feel more courageous, and they need to do the things that scare them. But they're in a place where it's like it's comfortable where they are. It's comfortable, okay?
Well, if they're comfortable, they're not going anywhere.
All right, so can you elaborate on that? Because a lot of people are afraid of actually getting uncomfortable, and you and I know that the only way to grow is to be in an uncomfortable state, but what's your perspective on that?
Well, I chase down uncomfortable scenarios. I mean, if you just watch the conversations I have with people these days.
Yes, we had dinner the other night that was immediately, within 1 minute, was the most vulnerable, raw conversation I think I've ever seen at a dinner party.
Yeah, and it's because I like to send out heat-seeking missiles for discomfort, because I know that when you're uncomfortable, you're growing, period, whether you like it or not. When you're comfortable, you're not growing. And it's not like every minute of the day has to be discomfort. I don't want that either. But you need to have a certain percentage of your day where you're outside your comfort zone, because that's where your dreams are. That's where your growth is. That's where your stretch. You know, if everybody would be a multimillionaire if it was comfortable to get there. Everybody would be in a happy, perfect marriage if it was comfortable to get there. Everybody would be in great shape and physically toned and healthy if they were able to be comfortable getting there. But, you know, comfort leads to atrophy, and atrophy leads to death.
Absolutely. At the time of this interview, Sean, you recently experienced a very, very traumatic near-death accident. Mm-hmm. And you've made some really significant changes in your life, in relationships, in business, as a result of that. One thing that I heard you say at a dinner that we had recently with another Lifebook couple, David and Nicole Jackson, was that you're committed to anything in your life that is good or great, you're committed to basically destroy to make it excellent. So can you talk about that? Because I think that has a lot to do with this comfort zone. If people are comfortable, it's good and great right now. Why would we disrupt that?
Well, because there's always more, and there's always new adventures. And, you know, I'm somebody who has enough track record now. I've proven to myself enough that when you settle, you end up resenting yourself. When you do the opposite of settling, which is you reach, then you always look up to yourself. And I think it's more important that you focus on how you're conditioning your own mind than what you're doing in the external world. And you and I have had this conversation recently where I said, it's not what you just did there that matters. It's just what you taught yourself there. You know, you just conditioned yourself to a certain behavior. Is that the conditioning you want? And, you know, each time you tell somebody you're going to do something and then you don't, you're conditioning yourself that you don't follow through. Especially when you tell yourself, okay, I'm going to go to the gym today, and you're the only one that knows that you made that commitment, and then you don't do it, your brain's like, next time you say, I'm going to go to the gym today, you're going to be like, bullshit. You said that yesterday. And so we're constantly eavesdropping in on our own internal dialogue. So I don't know what the question was.
That's okay. One thing that you just made me think of was, you know, part of my childhood was being raised in chaos. And Sean, you know the story, but I just want to share it with the listener because it's kind of what led me to pursue this experience I had with fear, where I was 10 years old. I was sitting down in a courtroom, and I had to literally look into my mom's eyes and tell her that I no longer felt safe living with her because of her alcoholism. And that just, that moment, I made a connection at a very young age that telling the truth means losing love. Telling the truth means losing love. And I want to bring in relationships into this, the, I think it's sixth category in Life Book, because it's so important. And John says, our relationships are our greatest source of pleasure and our greatest source of pain, or our greatest source of pain.
If they're going well, you can't get any better. Yeah. And when they're not going well, you can't get any worse.
Exactly. So can we talk about that importance of speaking the truth? I mean, you know, so many people go through life with little small secrets and little small, you know, hiding things, because if they approach their partner, if they approach their kids, if they approach their family with the truth of what they want to say, then it's going to be uncomfortable. They're afraid of making other people uncomfortable. And I know recently, one of the things I respect most about you is just your level of, like, it doesn't matter what the fallout's going to be, if there is any. It's just your commitment is to truth, because that's how important this relationship is to you. So can you talk about how you were able to get to that place, and what, how is that impacting your relationships with Mindy, with your wife, with family, with friends? What happens when you show up and you just tell the truth about what you're thinking, what you're feeling, and really what you're wanting?
Well, you end up being the most at peace, and they end up being the most frazzled potentially. I think you have a choice. You can either live in a world where you speak your truth and you know that it may not be welcomed, or you hold your truth back so that you can get welcomed. And it's not a genuine welcoming when you're not being yourself. I believe that honesty has timing. So I'm not like, you need to speak your truth to everyone in every moment. I think there is a time and a place for honesty, that you don't have to tell all the details and all the moments. But if you end up living a life that is not in alignment or congruent with what you feel on the inside, it's only a matter of time. It will eat you alive. And you might have to throw things away. You know, Mindy and I are in a marriage where we say, we don't know if we're going to be together forever. And that's an old model. Oh, I'm going to be with you forever. But that model doesn't work for us. We would rather say we will be with each other as long as we feel we are growing together.
That can be incredibly uncomfortable for some people to actually say in a relationship, in a marriage.
Right? I don't want to be in a relationship because somebody made a promise 13 years ago that they can't get out of. Screw that.
Totally. One of the greatest pieces of advice I ever got as it relates to this is a saying where it says, the greatest freedom in life is to allow another to have their own experience. And again, Sean, you know me very, very well. So I get that intellectually, and still I'm challenged by that, right? I've got relationships with certain family members where I try to manage their emotions. I try to remove the pain that they're experiencing, which they may not even be experiencing pain, but I'm projecting it as pain.
Right. So, yeah. I'm making assumptions for sure.
Yeah. Now I want to talk about, what are some fears that you are currently experiencing? Are you experiencing any fears, and what are those that are showing up for you if they are? Yeah.
I would say that I still have fears that the changes that I've made, I won't uphold. I have the fear that I don't have enough focus to stay on task. Sometimes I feel fear that. I fear that I might be so blunt and honest on this planet now that I'm going to lose people who I love because they're not going to be able to handle it. It's already happened. But all these fears are fears that I'm willing to risk. You know, and that's the thing. There's nothing in my life that I feel like, oh, I can't lose that. No, I could lose my marriage and I'll be all right. I could lose my money, I'll be all right. Lose my family, I'll be all right. All those things would suck to lose, but I can't live in fear thinking like, oh my goodness, I shouldn't say this, I shouldn't do that, because what if they leave me? Well, if they leave me for being myself, then we're not meant to be together in the first place.
I love it. one of the philosophies that I'm a big fan of is Stoicism. And I think it was birthed by a man named Seneca. And one thing that kind of the ancient scripts talks about is to overcome fear, you must envision the worst possible outcome, like the worst case scenario. And it goes against, Sean, as you know, like the most of the personal growth stuff out there of like to focus on positive thinking and, you know, do all those things. But when you envision what the worst possible scenario could be, and you realize that you can come out the other side still you, still living, still happy on that other side, it removes a lot of the energy and the power of that fear that's keeping you stuck in that place.
Yeah, I mean, there's a difference between visualizing the worst case scenario and getting panicked and sending out strong waves of energy of like, oh my gosh, I don't want this, but really I am bringing it into my reality, versus like visualizing it from a space of disconnection and being unattached and like, you know what? I lost my marriage. I lost my friendship. If I lost my life, even, it's going to be what it's going to be. And that neutral, calm space is what allows you to become unattached.
Absolutely. I want to throw a little Luis Hay out there because I'm reading the book, How You Can Heal Your Life.
Yeah.
And I know you study a lot of that.
You are a personal growth synthesizer,
look
brother.
Look at that. I sure am, aren't I? One of the questions that I'm curious to get your perspective on is where do certain fears live in the body, and like where do they live, and how do they manifest in the body, and what can you do about those?
Well, theoretically, fear can live anywhere in the tissue. It can live anywhere in the bones, anywhere in the organs, even in the field around you. And according to me and what I've seen in my life with my clients and my own research, fear manifests in, you know, some people in their feet, meaning they feel stuck. Some people in their lower back, around money. Some people in their shoulders and neck, around feeling the weight of the world on them. You know, there's all kinds of places.
Directly at me right there, by the way, for the listener.
I mean, there's all kinds of ways that fears can get trapped in the body, because fear is a vibration. And everything has its own vibration. And if you hold on to fear, That stuck non-flowing energy, that's low vibration, can get into the tissues. And that's why they say the issues are in the tissues.
Interesting. Thank you for sharing that perspective. I want to talk about...
That you can say when you're moving on to the next question.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of a nice little transition, right?
Yeah, not so nice, but keep going.
I want to ask you about courage. Because, I, you know, with it being character month, if I look in my life book today, I know the number one character trait or virtue that I want to turn into a habit in my life book is courage.
Yeah.
And I view you as someone who's incredibly courageous. Mm. And, you know, is courage something that you were born with and you've got to be born with it? Is it something that you've built and you've created over, you know, 36 years of your life? What's been your experience, if you've done this consciously or unconsciously, with strengthening that courage muscle that you have?
Well, courage is the result of doing things that scare you. You know, and when you take acts of courage, you get the strength, no matter how it resolves itself, no matter what happens. When you're courageous, you get the strength. And I love taking acts of courage. And I find that you crave what you give yourself most. And when I give myself courageous opportunities and I take them, I just get more and more and more and more confident. I become more and more unstoppable. And so you have to look for what is something that if you were to do it, no matter how it were to end, you would get more in alignment with your power. And I've not always been courageous. I think it's taken time. There are times where I go backwards in time, and I have less courage than I did maybe 8 years ago. So it's life is not a perfect, steady incline at all times.
Absolutely. What's the what is the scariest thing, Sean, that you've ever done?
Got on an airplane to fly to California without telling my parents, and I'd never been on an airplane without them before.
Okay.
That was up there.
Did you have to do anything to psych yourself up to do something like that? Like tremendously.
I had to jump.
You had to jump.
You got to just jump, you know, because if I would have had to wait till I psyched myself into it, I'd still be in that airport terminal.
Absolutely. I love that. Cause like I always, when I talk about fear, it's like, you can't psych yourself into being courageous. You just have to do that thing that terrifies you. And that fear of the unknown, that thing that we're afraid of, like a lot of people think, and I've experienced this cause I talk to you so much about this, that, you know, I need to have a crystal clear vision before I go take action. I need to know exactly what the steps are to get from A to B before I actually start the work. And I always share a metaphor where I ask somebody and myself, obviously, because I always speak to myself when I do this, to imagine that, you know, you're walking through a pitch black cave with nothing but a flashlight just illuminating the few feet in front of you. You know, you can't see your destination of where you're going. You can't see what's happening on the other side of you taking that flight by yourself that you've never done before. But by you trusting and having faith in yourself and a belief in that every step you take, more and more of your path with the flashlight becomes illuminated. Mm-hmm. And you may realize on that path that you are on the wrong direction, and then you can course correct. But we think, you know, oh, I don't know which direction to take. Just take one, right? Like the best decision you can make is the right one. The worst decision you can make is the wrong one, or the second best is the wrong one. And the worst one you can make is no decision at all. So you made that decision, which is tremendously powerful. I want to share one thing, and I want to get your feedback on this, because this is something I talk a lot about distinguishing a fear that is one that's, say, keeping you alive, because I think fear at times can be a good thing. And there's also fears that are keeping you from living that are not good things, right? One is a rational fear. And I share the example, Sean, of like, imagine you're woken up in the middle of the night to somebody breaking into your house.
Oh, right?
That fear that you feel, that fight or flight response.
That would be bad for them.
Yeah, that would be bad for them. And a year house would be bad for them. True.
Yeah.
But if you felt that fear is something that I would say is a good fear. Like that fight or flight response.
Fear. I would not call that fear. I'd call that danger.
Okay.
And there's a distinction. Danger has an element of accuracy. Mm-hmm. You know, getting in a ring with a lion that hasn't eaten in 3 days is dangerous.
Yes.
That's different than signing up for a public speaking course where you're afraid. You know, and that's why I love the movie, I think it's called
After Earth.
Will
Smith. I watched it with you.
Yeah. Where he said, don't get me wrong, danger exists, but that is not, you don't need to be afraid of danger, you just need to be aware of danger. And so, yeah, the adrenal glands are going to kick on, and you're going to have a lot of decisions to make really quick when you're in moments that are based on danger. But that's different than fear. And I think most people think they're the same, and they're not.
Yeah, okay. I totally respect that distinction for sure. And one of my favorite quotes from that movie, After Earth, is danger is real, fear is a choice. Right. But the thing is this, that fear that people feel, let's say public speaking, that feels pretty much exactly the same in your body as if somebody was breaking into your house, or as if you're being chased by a lion or something like that. And it's like, you've got to be able to distinguish, even though they feel the same, even though your heart beats faster and your palms are sweaty and, you know, it's hard to speak and you're breathing more shallow. One of them is good. That danger is keeping you alive. That fear is keeping you from actually living. And the only way to overcome that fear, and this is just a constant theme throughout this, is to actually do the thing that scares you. And by you doing that over and over again, stringing together days and weeks and months and years, you become more courageous on the other side. So, this is really kind of the entire flow of the interview, Sean. This was really good. One thing that I would love for you to share with the Lifebook VIP community is how can they connect with you, learn more from you. I know you've got some really amazing things coming up that you're excited about in your business. Could you share that with the listener?
Sure. So they can check out SeanStephenson.com. That's SeanStephenson.com. They can check me out on Facebook. I do regular postings daily. I host live speaker trainings once a year. I don't know when this is going to be released, but this next training is August 19th to the 21st, 2016. They can find out more about that on my website. And that event is called 10K Speeches. I have different other products and books, but in the end of the day, I hope that just somebody gets value from me, that they're going to investigate more and want to bring more Sean into their life.
Absolutely. And I want to recommend two things that you didn't mention. One is your book, Get Off Your Butt, because I'm a huge fan of that. And then I know you've got a program coming out because you recently did an event called The Key is Confidence. And a lot of people, Sean, I don't think I've really told you this, lately have been acknowledging me for my confidence, how I'm showing up. And the truth is, I've learned a lot of it from you, brother. So thank you for sharing your gifts with the world. And guys, if you want to find out a little bit more about me, again, my name is Peter Scott. Definitely connect with me on Facebook because I create a ton of content as well. If you search Peter Scott, IV as in the fourth, my website is designafearlesslife.com. And I recently published a book about 6 months ago called The Fearless Mindset, where I interviewed some of the top entrepreneurs in the world on their mindset, their habits, their rituals for how they overcome fear, Sean being one of them, as well as a couple other very powerful people that are, I also believe, are Lifebook members. So Sean, thank you, brother. I really appreciate you sharing your perspective on fear, on insecurity, and of course, just sharing your gifts with the Lifebook community here.
My pleasure, brother. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye.